Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. And our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2 5 and 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved and raised up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. That is a profound statement. If we understand that statement, the church is unstoppable. Everything that was put under Christ's feet, if we're in Christ and Christ is in us, everything is under our feet as well. We have to claim that authority. We have to accept that identity. Not just stop at the cross, but be crucified with him and risen with him and seated with him. Three stops. And I really appreciate the pastor who put that out online. Phenomenal summary of the gospel of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. I want to talk briefly today about Soviet socialist subversion and how it spread around the world. And some people, I've been reading a lot lately about the reflections on 1917 and the revolution in Russia. And some people say, well, you know, socialism is gone. Russia does not export socialism anymore. Socialism is not gone, and it is still, to this day, trying to subvert even America. And to say that it's not, you can look at a lot of policies out there, look at a lot of what is said in academia, look at what is said in the media, look at what is said in the courtrooms of America. And it sounds very much like socialism is alive and well, because it is. And we have to take this seriously. So when I reported, you know, on Redneck Revolt, I had somebody say, oh, they're just not that big a deal. You don't need to worry about them. You always need to worry when communists are arming. Now, I say worry not in the or unchristian sense, but you need to be concerned about it. Bring those issues before God, obviously, but it's not something to take lightly. When communists are arming in America, communists arm almost exclusively to eventually try revolution and to try to overthrow capitalism, to try to overthrow our Constitution. They've been unsuccessful because we have met the threat. Because we have understood the threat, we have recognized that it is indeed a threat. So we can't take these people lightly. And just a cursory view of that Russian Revolution in 1917 shows you that most people didn't take the Bolsheviks seriously. They thought they were extremists. They thought they were way out there radicals, totally against the things that Russia stood for. Even a vote, they actually allowed a vote, and the Bolsheviks were soundly defeated, but refused to give up power, instituted their secret police, and began taking out their opponents and shooting them. Again, not taken seriously. And then clashed with what they called the whites, the Kulaki, the most productive members of society at that time, people who loved freedom, that were Christians, clashed with the Reds. And eventually the Reds drove them into the ground again because nobody took them seriously. So I bring that up today as you know, I just finished reading a great paper that was actually done, published in the Smithsonian Magazine on the history of Russia. It was very well done. And it's important that when I bring those kind of things up, that we do take them seriously. We have to. And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. In the Middle East, I've talked about the aligning that is going on with the Egyptian-Saudi UAE bloc, and then you have the Iranians on the other with their proxies in Lebanon. You have Israel and the United States agreeing on a course, a strategic course in Iran. You have the Palestinians rebuked by the Saudis in the UAE and told to get in line. You have the Turks who are trying to reclaim their prior position. And from the Ottoman Empire of being the lead Sunni country in the Middle East. But today, it's being reported by Arab News that there's outrage over Turkey's religious affairs state agency, reportedly saying girls as young as 9 can marry under Islamic law. In other words, a part of the Turkish government is green-lighting child marriage in Turkey, and that's a huge turnaround from secular Turkey of old. So you can see where Erdogan is taking that country. And obviously, there are other countries in the Middle East that are going to use that to diminish Turkey. In addition to that, Jordan's King Abdullah comes out and says that he is essentially the true guardian of Jerusalem and Islam. Now, that doesn't make sense to many people in the West because you don't understand the history. The Hashemite kingdom, or the kingdom in Jordan, was originally the caretakers of Mecca. In the Kaaba in Mecca. That's the stone that they go around. Previously, that stone actually had over 300 niches in it with idols in it representing each day of the year. And that was the responsibility of the Hashemite kingdom. Well, the Saudis warred with the Hashemite kingdom, kicked them out, and the Saudis have been the caretakers ever since. And now that the Saudis are going, quote, moderate, the Jordanian king is essentially establishing that he is actually the true guardian of Islam, again, trying to stake a claim as the true Sunni country in the Middle East. And all of these, obviously, against Iran, where there have been massive protests that have waned a little bit because the strike that was supposed to come together did not. 1,000 people reported arrested, dozens dead. We don't know how many exactly. So we're seeing, again, this aligning happening in the Middle East, and there's going to be these spasms happening over there politically as things come into shape. Also on the international front, talked about Trump cutting off aid to the Palestinian Authority, but also he's now talking about cutting off aid to Lebanon. I personally agree that we should not be giving money to our enemies. And if the Palestinians are not going to truly pursue peace, then I think Trump's right, totally on the right track. Now, that brings up the bigger question, should we do foreign aid at all? I think instead the better policy is actually using our businesses and our missionaries overseas to help people in those regions. The massive bureaucracy it takes to send foreign aid to these countries actually wastes money. So, again, this kind of goes back to decentralization is the way. That's what George Washington talked about with entangling alliances as well. Now, there is one country. And it's not to say that you can't have relationships with countries, okay? But there is one country I do make an exception for, and that country is Israel. And that is very controversial to a lot of people. But I always go back to Harry Truman when he said it's the right thing to do. And I think that's enough about that. But I really believe, But Trump is headed in the right direction, and especially by defunding the United Nations, $285 million being cut from the United Nations by the U.S. finally. A lot of people saying, finally, we're doing that. Also on the international front, North Korea, and an odd story coming out today about how a test in North Korea accidentally hit a North Korean city, but this was last year, that a North Korean missile actually landed in a residential area after failing. Well, okay, but the fact is now they are successfully testing things, have declared an intent to attack the United States of America. We need to constitutionally deal with the situation and have the honest conversation. Is it willing to go, are we willing to go to war over it? Is it a just cause? We need to have the debate constitutionally and not react after the fact. Also on the international front, Venezuela, children suffering from failed socialist policies, a report coming out of the emergency rooms there in Venezuela that children are dying because of malnutrition, among other things. I had some people say, well, it's not really the socialist policies, it's the way it was implemented down there in Venezuela. No, it actually was the centralization of control over the economy, centralization of control over many other areas that led to this. Centralization of control fails. That's it. That's the lesson. Also on the international front, a Hungarian Christmas message from Viktor Orban. I love this because Viktor Orban has been doing a phenomenal job over there, unapologetically Christian, says we need to defend our Christian cultures, our Christian culture, beliefs, heritage, values, etc. And we are not just going to stand by and allow people to be harassed. And Poland standing up to the European Union, pushing forward reforms of its judiciary to decommunize its judiciary. In other words, it was one of the only places in Poland that was not decommunized. There are communists still on the bench. And so these reforms would allow them to remove judges who are antithetical to the freedom and liberty that Poland is trying to establish there. Again, from a Christian perspective. So you see this aligning happening. And Eastern Europe is really coming back to what it was back in the 1600s, where the Polish, Hungarian, Northern Italian folks banded together to fight the Ottoman invasion. Siege of Vienna. Very famous. And you're seeing that same aligning today, with Northern Italy, Milan and Venice voting for independence because of some of the problems they're facing with the massive immigration influx, Poland, Czech Republic, and Hungary. It's amazing watching this unfold again and how history really does rhyme. On the national front, Trump putting jihad back in intelligence may not sound like much, but putting the word of jihad back in intelligence threat assessments was an important thing in identifying where the threat's coming from. It doesn't sound like much, but it's actually a huge step forward to having accurate intelligence analysis. Also on the national front, and this coming to us from Technocracy News, DARPA announcing that they will continue with their Gremlin I'm not making these names up. I don't know where they come from, but they're going to continue with their Gremlins program, which is a flying aircraft carrier with a bunch of drones inside of it. Now, some sci-fi movies have shown what this looks like. Star Wars, for example, other movies as well. But these small drones would carry a 60-pound payload each. And you can check this out on Technocracy. Technocracy News is a great, great site, but just shows you how far we're going. And this is the next generation that they're testing now. Also on the national front, this Alzheimer's treatment found by accident as they were trying to test a treatment for diabetes, found profound memory loss reversal through this treatment. So a lot of people out there hopeful that this may actually get loved ones back to where they were before that are suffering from Alzheimer's. Also on the national front, the Maunder minimum is an idea in regards to sunspots, that the lack of sunspots actually results in a cooling of the Earth. Well, we are approaching a Maunder minimum, or a extended period without sunspots, which means we are actually going to go through global cooling. And that is what you're seeing on the East Coast right now anyway, through this bomb cyclone, as they call it. But it shows that the activity of the sun directly correlates to the temperatures on the Earth, which most people intuitively know, but global warming folks and alarmists don't like to recognize. So based on the idea behind the Maunder minimum, or a lack of sunspots, we may be heading into a global cooling instead of a warming. Also on the national front, California prosecutes a man for anti-Muslim posts, okay? 41-year-old Mark Fayen expressed his opinions at the Islamic Center of South California's Facebook page in 2016. Quote, "The more Muslims we allow into America, the more terror we will see," end quote, one of the comments. And now, facing prosecution. And they're prosecuting Mr. Fayen under a California penal code, which states, quote, "Every person who with intent to annoy or harass makes repeated telephone calls or makes repeated contact by means of an electronic communication device to another person is guilty of a misdemeanor," end quote. Well, that would be most of the Democrat trolls that come on our pages if that was the standard. But really, I mean, this is kind of frightening where you actually see speech now being abridged because people just don't agree with it because of the viewpoint of the speech, not where it's being said, but the actual viewpoint. Because clearly this could apply to almost every troll on the internet. Startling. Also on the regional front, and along the same lines, Christian persecution of sweet cakes, $135,000 fine upheld by an Oregon court, again, for not wanting to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding ceremony. How do you have freedom of religion without the ability to say, no, I don't want to participate in that ceremony? And it's kind of interesting. If you make the argument the other way and say, if I put a gun to your head and I make you go to church, people say that's horrible. And they would be right to say that. So how is fining somebody $135,000 trying to close their business because they don't want to participate in a ceremony? How's that different? Interesting. Also on the regional front, the Bundy Ranch trial hearing coming up here on January 8th, Sessions is investigating what has happened in that case, but specifically, Judge Navarro is going to rule on January 8th whether this is a mistrial with prejudice or essentially a full dismissal of the case. But that's not where this should end. This should end after there's investigations into the Department of Justice handling of this matter, and into the Bureau of Land Management. And we broke this story on Patriot Radio and on Readout News here a couple weeks ago. Probably one of the most damning indictments of the Bureau of Land Management ever disclosed, even since the Wayne Hage case. And it was a smoking gun, and probably the most damning in the last 15 years outside of Snowden. So keep your eyes on this, but it's not over. And some of the revelations in the memo from Larry Wooten, special agent who was the lead investigator of the case, to Andrew Goldsmith, the National Criminal Discovery Coordinator, were not just beyond the pale. They actually validated the concerns of many people here in the Western United States of government intrusion into property rights. Lastly, on the regional front, Attorney General Ferguson pushing his assault weapons ban again. Now, I want to highlight something that a lot of people don't know is in that bill. A magazine registry. You'd have to get a license. Then you would have to register your magazines over 10 rounds or just register any of them and put a serial number on it. That's unbelievable. But he's pushing it, and we're going to be fighting it again. We were able to kill the bill last year in committee. Also on the regional front, along that same line, session starts Monday. There are a lot of things happening right now. It has been very, very busy in the lead-up to this session, so pay attention. We're going to be bringing you every week on Tuesday an update of what is happening in the legislature and how you can be involved with Rep. Dave Taylor from Olympia. And also along this line, too, the WSRP, Susan Hutchison, is stepping down. Leading contender for the seat that she's vacating is Marty McClendon. And Marty's a good friend, been on the radio show. He has a radio show over in Western Washington, been on his show several times, a great Christian man. So some changes happening at the state level in the Republican Party, and that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for us. Make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to, shoot me a note at matt@voteshea.com, matt@voteshea.com. Love to hear your ideas, love to hear from you. And we want to talk about the issues that matter to people, and that's why I have my next guest, who I'm bringing on the show today, because he is just a regular guy. Yeah, more than that. He's a cattle rancher, past president of Cattle Producers of Washington, Stevens County cattleman. He's a rancher that has been doing this for decades, and he was raised in Stevens County. He has a summer range down in Benton County, a summer range up in Stevens County and a winter range down in Benton County. And he's been dealing with all of the government intrusion into this for years. And so I really wanted to bring him on to educate everybody out there about what's happening in the cattle industry in Washington State, particularly in eastern Washington. Ted Wishon, thank you very much for being on Patriot Radio today. Thank you really for making the time to come up and be on the show and educate folks.
Well, thank you, Matt, and our industry thanks you, and thank you for your service to our state, too. We appreciate having a patriot representing us in Olympia, so thank you.
Well, thank you for saying that, and I would like to start off, if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the cattle industry in Washington State, and then we'll kind of get into some of the government intrusion that's going on in one specific area we're going to talk about today that's really, I think, alarming.
Well, thank you. And our industry is very open, very health responsible. We vaccinate our heifer calves for what they call brucellosis. Most of your producers will do that. It's a voluntary vaccination program. We'll call that bangs to make that easier through our visit. And bulls are tested for trichinosis, and we'll call that trick. And that is where they're proposing to change our rules, is to go from a metal ear tag to an RFID tag. And then they will continue to regulate this further along to where they have individual animal ID tracking on movements. And our industry moves an awful lot. We've got 280 miles between our summer range and our winter range, and we move back and forth semi-loads of cattle to a wintering area where it's a little more feasible than Stevens County. Several producers do this. And, you know, we make moves as the weather predicts and as feed predicts, and to put yourself in a situation where you have to third party verify or to have these animals read before movement is very cumbersome. You have a storm hit in Stevens County and it's time to head south. It doesn't give you time to coordinate with third party verification for these for tag readings. We feel that Cattle Producers of Washington opposes this rule change. We feel that it's very encumbersome, hard to manage, hard to enforce, and it's going to be handicapping. It truly is, Matt.
Well, we're already competing against foreign beef, particularly Brazilian. How is this going to drive the cost of cattle production up?
As the state proposes this rule change, which rule changes are very difficult to be involved in when a department decides to make a rule change, it's a challenge. They're going on a cooperative agreement with the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, to implement free RFID tags. Well, nothing's ever free. Somebody's picking the tab up for that somewhere. And so that's how this ball will start rolling. I'm sure when the cooperative agreement runs out, the producers will be stuck with this tag. The implementation, the putting attaching it to an animal's ear is time-consuming and labor-intensive. And as of right now, Washington State seems to be out on an island by itself trying to implement this rule. So we will actually put an undue burden upon our own industry to try to compete with other states that aren't being put into this ruling.
So I remember years ago they tried a national animal identification system and it was met with ferocious resistance. Now this Washington State animal identification system comes up and it's always, well, we want to help prevent disease, but that it really doesn't work that way. I mean, it sounds nice, but it really doesn't work that way in practical terms. So could you walk through for folks how how disease is dealt with if it does come out? And also there was one incident of mad cow down in Mabton, Washington, where that cow actually came from.
Okay. When animals are exposed to transmittable diseases, they set up a quarantine area. And they'll set up a fairly large area, and through the ability, through brand papers and health certificates and different inspection and marketing processes, they'll start shrinking. They'll start shrinking that quarantine area to where they can start actually going out on the ground and physically examining animals and being on the ground and clearing this disease impact. A lot of these diseases move fast. A lot of them move slow. But the state has a animal disease tracing program that we put all this into a database under Doc Eldridge, our state vet at that time. And this system, I don't believe, has even reached maturity yet. And we're stepping up and going another direction. And it's a great concern to us. To prevent it, it does not really prevent any diseases, Matt. It helps trace after the disease is in an outbreak. And our concern is if they get the information, where are they storing it? That's proprietary information to us producers. And where are they storing this information? What are our safeguards against hacking or access? And when is it accessed and who has access to it and why? And it won't prevent. It will not prevent an animal disease. It will. It might assist in the closing of that quarantine area, but this is a big, cumbersome thing, and it's pretty concerning when the state portrays it as animal health. It's just a trackability. It does not prevent disease. I think it'll be actually a little bit of a degraded. It'll have potential to erode animal health because people will choose not to Bangs vaccinate because they don't want the RFID tags in their animals' ears. And so it actually has the possibility to erode animal health in our state.
And the one mad cow disease that we did know of actually happened in Mabton, Washington, but it came from Canada.
Correct.
It didn't come from us. It didn't come from our herds.
Yeah. And it was a dairy animal that came down here. We call those illegal aliens, I guess. I guess we didn't have a tall enough wall, but that cow. And the amazing thing about this is the state portrays this that it'll fix that, and they're treating the cow calf producer, which is the low risk side of this industry. They're treating the low risk side like a high risk side. And until they can show us where they have the high risks under control, the low risks should be business as usual. We haven't had in the beef cattle industry concerns or issues. 11 years since the 3033 group that I sat on put these proposals forward, and we have yet to have had to access that ADT program in the beef cow industry. We provide a healthy product that's vet inspected at the time of leaving the state of Washington or into market at the sale yards. It's vet inspected. We hand that healthy animal up the food chain to a feeder or a stocker or maybe even into a processing plant, and we're supposed to accept the liability. Well, we've lost control of that animal. That's not ours, and it's going into a higher risk area than what we had it in. And so to put that burden back on the producers, pretty tough.
Well, also, it's so interesting to me that the cattle industry here in Washington State has such high quality control standards compared to other countries like Brazil, where they're just letting that stuff come in. And, you know, it's like you guys are the bad guys and the other countries are just getting a pass. I mean, look at Chinese food, for example. Can you give some examples of the frustration, or just give your reaction to that, I guess, of the frustration the cattle producers face when you have kind of this double standard out there?
And that double standard is very tough. When we proposed going to country of origin labeling, we wanted those products labeled at the counter in the retail market. And we worked very hard to get that country of origin labeling intact. And they took it away. And the packers just said it was just too cumbersome to be able to keep the nationality and the country of origin labeling sorted out and in a high-speed disassembly plant where they're processing live animals into product. It was just too cumbersome. And now that we can't keep the nationality straight, they want individuality. And that just seems like that just... where the standards are so high here and so low in foreign countries, we need to be able to have a label that'll tell you that is our product and to differentiate ourselves from other products that are being imported in.
You know, and all those products coming in from other countries are already being labeled anyways, right? So it wouldn't have been, I mean, you're talking one line, right? It just wouldn't have been the burden they tried to make it out to be.
You know, and it's very deceptive to the consumer when they walk into the grocery store or the meat market or the restaurant and it says USDA inspected, and they think they're eating domestic product and they're consuming something that has been inspected by the United States Department of Agriculture, not produced by a US producer, but inspected. And we know how those inspections go. In this proposed rule, they talk about US beef exports to China have specific requirements. Well, that is not what this rule should be addressing. This is supposed to be a one-way, put it in a database, so if you have a outbreak, they can access that information then. This isn't a trading tool. This wasn't designed to be a trading tool. This is an animal disease traceability. It's not a marketing tool for the next step up the food chain from us to use to receive their high-dollar markets.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what you implied is, you know, where does this stop, right? We start doing this ID system, then we move to location tracking. I mean, you and I have talked before, and I know you've talked with many other cattle producers about the radical environmentalists want to know where every cow is at all times. But, you know, when you ask where the wolves are, that's a different story. We'll get to that here in a second. But, you know, they want to know where your cow is at all times. How is that right now cumbersome already in the existing system? And also, why would you not want people to know where your cows were?
Well, as I said earlier, it's proprietary information, and it's a competitive market that we're in. The ranchers' most important objective is to market his animal for the highest dollar that he can. The next step up the food chain, their most important achievement is to acquire that at the most economical rate they can. And so to put that information out there, how many calves are left for the fall run or a spring run of cattle, how many cows that they think are going to be going into the surplus chain, that's proprietary information. And a rancher feels very possessive about his operation. It takes us a lot of acres to run these cattle on, and you secure those acres. And to think that in the last sentence in the proposed rules, the department will continue to move ATT forward with a multi-phase approach and implementation. First phase being this proposed rulemaking, and the end goal having all cattle identified and with RFID before leaving a Washington premise. And it's tough to think that we have to put the federal number or take that mark and put it in our cows. We have to register all of our premises before we can put that animal into the market to sell, trade, and buy, and barter. That's just getting too close. That's getting too close to infringement in my book, to have to take that number and give that information forward.
Well, if we start chipping animals, why not start chipping human beings, right? To track diseases in humans and make sure that our locations are all environmentally sound too, right?
Well, that goes down a very, very scary road right there. And they're talking about all species. The department doesn't want to stop. They want to handle the bovine ID first, but they've made a commitment to do an all species identification system this way. And so, the llamas, the horses, the sheep, the hogs, they want to identify all animals this way, and it's an infringement.
It's incredible to actually be talking about this. 8-10 years ago, it was okay, they bring this up and the technology really isn't there. Well, the technology is there today, and especially doing real-time tracking of these animals. And you could see, too, based on what the environmentalists want to do using drones over ranches, that if they did real-time tracking of cattle and it gets anywhere near a creek, boom, you get fined for it, like you have the money to pay for those fines.
I question where their sound science is. If you put a RFID tag in an 8-month-old heifer, and you expect that tag to read when that cow's 10 years old, 9 years down the line, I question if that technology is good enough. In the speed that we move these cattle, they have to single file into a sale yard off of semi-trucks or gooseneck trailers, and then they have to semi-file out of those to be read. You don't know if they're read right now until you download the information. And I question that they have the wherewithal to build the program that they're desiring and have the enforcement and have the compliance. There's a lot of people out there that are not going to comply with this, and they're going down a pretty tough road.
So let's talk a little bit about the fact that this chipping of animals doesn't go to wolves and probably should go to wolves, because that constitutes a pretty dramatic threat to the food supply of America, because it constitutes a threat to cattle and sheep, among other species. How is the wolf situation going up there in Stevens County? And from some of the listeners that may not have heard what's happening up there, if you could kind of give an overview of what's happening, what's been happening, and where you think things are headed.
Boy, that kind of gets out of my wheelhouse there a little bit, but I'm impacted by it. We've had confirmed losses this year on our northern range right in North Stevens County. Both of my sons lost calves. We're a husband, wife, and two-boy operation. That's our crew, and all of our boys have, both of our boys have their own cattle. They each lost cattle this year to wolves, confirmed by the state. It is detrimental, and one of the biggest problems is we're saturated wolf population in the northern counties, and we can't get them to deregulate them at the state level. They're deregulated federally on the Endangered Species list, but state, we can't get that done. Our hands are tied in a lot of areas on management of these wolves. Our Department of Fish and Wildlife is very reluctant to make any direction in control or containing or removing problem wolves due to the environmental pressures from different groups. It's very disheartening. I told the director, Phil Anderson, before he left, I said, Phil, I would like you to put your retirement policy right underneath that wolf policy. If that wolf policy doesn't work, I'd like your retirement not to work. And that was unheard of. But that's our retirement. That's our life. That's our livelihood. And we've allowed the apex predator to come in and have his way on our ranges. And our forefathers eradicated that years ago for good reasons. And so it's a challenge, Matt. It truly is. A lot of sleepless nights, a lot of concerns, and trying to make this industry a profitable, meaningful way of life is tough enough without feeding somebody's wolves.
Well, you know, there aren't huge margins. You don't get rich cattle ranching. You know, I think there's kind of a misperception that there's gigantic margins in the cattle industry, and it's just not the case. And getting back to the animal identification system, you know, this is just one more burden that's thrown, you know, on top of everything else. And really, we already have systems in place that have been there for a long time, brand inspectors, et cetera, to deal with some of these things. If you can, walk through how, you know, for people especially that are of the younger generation who believe that steak comes from Safeway or Albertsons, walk through the process of actually raising and producing cattle so people understand it and where, you know, the state or the federal government comes into the actual process so they get that big overview.
Okay. A majority of your – I'm going to go with a majority of the producers. There's always niche markets. There's always exceptions to everything. That's the amazing thing about it is they talk about good agriculture practices, you know, and best management practices. Our industry is so diverse that what fits one producer – in one area with his species and his herd and his type of range won't fit the other one in another area. And so it's a very diverse, broad-based deal. But the average producer is a spring calving operation. He calves in the spring of the year. He'll work his calves and vaccinate those calves at 2 to 3 months old. Most of us, especially the ones that are running in open spaces and range areas and Forest Service and different allotments and permit processes and out in the open, we choose to still hot iron brand our animals. And when we do that, we take responsibility. We take ownership. That animal is permanently marked with our return address on it. If something goes wrong or something goes good, our name is on the side of that animal. And so that's your main ID in the West, is that hot iron brand on that calf. And we do it at a young age, so it's a lot less painless. It heals, it's there, it's a short glimpse in that calf's time of life, and we take ownership at that point. That's when we say this is ours and we accept responsibility for it. That calf will run on its mother until fall of the year, be weaned, be marketed at different times. When it leaves the cow-calf operation, normally sometime into the fall to the next spring, a lot of the cattlemen are marketing then. Some will retain ownership, clear through, and feed them. But the majority of them are marketed. Majority are marketed through a sale yard or through a private marketing person. They are brand inspected at that time. Whether they're branded or not, they're inspected. They're identified at that time. They are health inspected. If you go to the sale yard, you pay a vet fee for that animal that's on staff. He's watching over everything there. You pay that vet fee. If you're shipping out of state, you do a brand and health inspection before you ship out. And you've released your liability for that animal at that time. You have presented that healthy, good, live, vibrant animal to go to the next step in that life. If you retain ownership, you hire a feedlot most of the time to go ahead and feed that animal out to that 1,300 to 1,500 pounds, and he goes into the into the marketing, into processing, and he's harvested and processed at that time, packed and sent to the retail sector. And so that's just a quick overview of how that goes. It's an industry, and it's a fast-moving industry. Somebody that's privately marketing their cattle off the ranch, they'll put those out there for some people to look at and bid, maybe on a video or computer type of deal. They'll get a call at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night, and that guy representing those cattle will say, I've got a buyer for those cattle. We need to brand inspect and ship those cattle, vet and health inspect those cattle, and ship on Friday if you accept this deal, because that's how long they're good for. It's normally about 24 to 48 hours. And so when you make that decision and commitment to market, it's not a slow, long process. It's pretty fast moving. And to think that the RFID is going to be able to keep up, I have questions of whether they can do that or not.
Well, it seems like actually some of the processes are slower in regards to the RFID. You know, some of the original proposals of 48 hours instead of acting on diseases that break out quicker, especially with other species. I mean, if this gets put into chickens or other species where diseases spread rapidly, I mean, you have to act within hours, not 2 days later. I mean, it's that fast.
Absolutely. And the reaction time on our Canadian immigrant that was down here in the dairy was a little sluggish, but things have changed a lot since then. We put together the ATT program, and I feel that we have a good response time now. All they need to do in the cow-calf sector, the dairy sector is a little bit different, and they've worked to try to get some compliance in there, but 90% of your calf-cow men, all you have to do is identify that animal and get to that kitchen table, that desk, that person's records, and he can tell you where that animal's been, when he released it, and then when we release it, we don't have control of it anymore when we market it. But most of your producers can tell you exactly where that calf's been, who its mother is and who its father is, and where and what it's been doing.
And that just makes sense, right? I mean, that's what everybody, I guess, would expect, except for certain people in bureaucracies that want to grow government. I want to talk briefly about land management. You know, I had this national news story that was fortunate by the grace of God to be a part of here a couple weeks ago in regards to the allegations against BLM and some of the allegations of corruption and just straight-up misconduct inside that agency. How is the working relationship in Washington State with federal agencies and state agencies generally? And I'd like to, if you could, comment briefly, too, on some of the regulations that are being proposed on stubble height and some of these other things as well.
Well, Matt, you're very well versed on our challenges. I can tell you that most people will not be able to ask you the questions about stubble height. Stubble height in a lot of the plan revisions in Washington State, I had an opportunity to visit some of the people on the southern end, and it's ironic how the federal representatives of our lands, they're managing our lands, will portray this as, well, this is just in the Colville National Forest or just in the Wenatchee Colville Forest or just in this region. And you get out of your area and you find out that your fellow producer in Echo, Oregon is faced with the same challenges. And they're trying to make it sound like we're the only ones faced with these challenges. And in our plan revision in the Colville National Forest, it says riparian areas will meet an 8-inch stubble height. Well, a lot of that Kentucky bluegrass that's invaded our riparian areas, if we don't touch it, it won't reach an 8-inch stubble. And so these plan revisions and these encroachments and water quality issues, we've got fantastic systems, and we produce clean water out of the forest, are all a challenge. I think that our relations with our federal entities in our area, we're blessed to have good relations with them. I don't feel threatened or singled out. It's a challenge to get our message out and get it on paper and get it heard and get it through the system, that we can't be burdened with what they're dealing with. Most of our area up here is DNR and Forest Service. We have very little BLM, but there is a movement in those departments, and it's more about control and more about access regulation. It's more about locking these lands up. You know, you hear the term rewilding the West, and you feel those pressures. I can't sit there and put my finger right on it, but you do feel those pressures and movements.
Well, if people have questions or they want to learn more, educate themselves more, how can they contact you, find out more information, maybe contact the Stevens County Cattlemen's? How can they go about doing that?
Well, the Stevens County Cattlemen's Association has their website up and running, and so does Cattle Producers of Washington. We maintain those websites underneath those names. And if anybody wants to call me, I'll put it out there, and they can contact me personally. I guess I could just probably put out my phone number, but I'm not on the internet type of a person. But they can contact me or other neighboring producers. Most of these producers are abreast of these challenges that we're facing.
Well, I want to really thank you and finish with something that came out. This was a second document that I obtained in the Bundy Ranch case. This was a memorandum from Assistant Special Agent in Charge Kent Kleeman, in which he cites Special Agent Wooten, Larry Wooten, who is the lead investigator who came out with the original bombshell memo that we were just talking about. But in this memorandum, they cite Wooten's notes on, quote, critical vulnerabilities of BLM in the case. And one of those critical vulnerabilities was this, quote, BLM is a poor manager of the resources such as grazing, end quote. You know, centralization of management of resources never seems to work. Cattle ranchers at the lowest level know the land the best, don't they?
Been on it for generations after generations and have improved it over the years. And they have an inherent right to be there. I mean, the Bundy case, I feel, was the opening of this topic and this discussion. I feel for that family. I feel for those people. But it needs to be opened up and discussed and reviewed.
And, you know, it kind of is offensive, at least to me, that, you know, the implication is that, Ted, you want to ruin the land. You just want to ruin the land and make money, when in fact it's actually in your best interest to steward the land the best you possibly can.
If I ruin it this year, I don't get to come back to very much next year. We have to continue to maintain our natural resources and have them to where they're, you know, they're usable year after year after year. You don't make changes in this industry overnight. They're long-term. If you decide you want to grow your operation to do it properly, it takes you years to grow. And, you know, we have to fuel the factory whether the market's good or not. Our factory, we can't dim the lights and send the boys home. We have to fuel that factory year-round, good times and bad. And so our factory is continuously running, and that's our mother cow. And so you don't dive in and dive out very fast and very easily. I grew up in the logging and timber industry also, and I was amazed when a Washington, D.C. reporter came out here and realized we weren't fighting over the last tree. And we have sustainable forest products, sustainable grazing resources, and a lot of people in this great nation don't even realize the jewel that we live in out here.
Well, in the last minute that we've got, any cowboy wisdom you want to tell the folks out in Eastern Washington, North Idaho, and Northeast Oregon?
We work hard, and we're dedicated to a healthy animal and a healthy supply of meat protein to our nation. And, you know, we're just out there doing the best we can for us and for our cattle and for the marketplace. And so just be with us. This program where it goes into rules is very, very difficult to combat. We might need some help. We need people to realize that this is unpopular. This is a step. The next thing it'll be is our kids or something. And I just can't see taking those steps and going in that direction.
Well, Ted Wishon, cattle rancher for Stevens County Cattlemen's, also Cattle Producers of Washington. Really thank you for everything that you're doing. You're a freedom fighter. You are a patriot. And, you know, as a good friend of mine always says, and actually has a bumper sticker to this effect, the West wasn't won on salad. So thank you for everything you're doing.
And thank you, Matt. We'll be over to see you on January 18th. I'll be back over there. We were over at the director's in December, and we're going to come back over in January. So we'll see you over there then.
I look forward to it, Ted. Tell everybody and the cattlemen's folks up there in Stevens County, I said hello as well.
Okay.
And everybody out there in Patriot Radio Land, you can check them out online. The Stevens County Cattlemen's have their website. Very simple to find. But also get yourself educated on this and the fact that they're going to this animal identification system. Many of you helped to fight this battle 8-10 years ago. Some of you had actually got into the entire movement of patriotism, the entire movement of state sovereignty and decentralization, which is really what America is and was founded on. I want to tell you, we're going into session this next week. Please stay tuned. Tuesdays, I'll be giving a weekly briefing on what's happening in the legislature. Also be posting things online, action items on Facebook, at Freedom Agenda Washington, also on my personal Facebook page, of how you can get involved. If you can't come testify, you can at least send emails, make phone calls, etc. And I do also want to mention something as well. During session, I am going to be on several different radio shows. One of those is Marty McClendon's radio show, which is on ACN every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. So there's many different ways you'll be able to get information during this session. And I want to thank you in advance, everyone out there, for your prayers. It's going to be a huge fight this year in the battle for freedom and liberty here in Washington. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.